Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. My name is Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest today is RX Gamble, also known to her friends in the AP world as Miss Brown. She's played a number of AP games through the years, and we'll be talking to her today. RX Gamble, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Hey, guys.
You had a class or seminar not too long ago. What was that all about?
Yeah, I did a workshop at the end of last year, 2019, and it was on whole cards. Like, I sold it as learning how to play whole cards, which it was, but it also concentrated on like longevity over short-term EV, like how to get longevity and advantage play, which is kind of like what we're going to talk about today. I wanted to say this on this show because I didn't get to explain my motivation at the time. And sorry, I'm in a custody dispute, which I think Munchkin and I told you about a while ago.
Yep.
Right. And it doesn't hurt my position to demonstrate in multiple ways, like my success or my credibility. So that was my motivation to do that. And it's not something I got to say at the time. And I think that clears it up a little bit why I did that. Does that make sense to you guys?
Oh, absolutely. And actually, I wanted to say, you mentioned, I guess you got a fair amount of blowback, but I didn't hear a lot of the blowback
I asked some whole carders like before I did it, like, hey, what do you think about this? And overall, like, they didn't care. There was one that was not for it at all, and he was pretty vocal about it, but overall they didn't care. And I know I sold it as like teaching whole cards, which is what I did, because when I learned, when I saw my first one, like, it really did get me going just to see it. And then I did show like different that you might not find in the wild unless somebody shows you. But it was really about longevity. It was like how to keep longevity, how to think outside of the box. Like, I know, and I knew that everybody that came, they were not going to be whole card players. They weren't going to affect the community because people came for like surveillance information or just information on team play. And like, I know you had Prax on the show last month or something like that. And he said to you guys that it was the best decision he ever made, which was like a great compliment, but I'm pretty sure whole carding is not his discipline. I think it was just him going and thinking outside of the box, like, oh, so you can beat every game, or, oh, this is how you attack this thing, or something like that. So I think a lot of people got that out of it.
Did you get, so you talked to people ahead of time, but did you get blowback after the fact?
No, I didn't actually.
Oh, well, that's good. That's good.
Yeah. Yeah. So going back to why I did it, it doesn't hurt my position to demonstrate different ways, you know, that I'm successful. It's so stale now because I did that in November of last year. And so now I'm still in this dispute over a year later. So now I'm going to do a Zoom call in the next couple of weeks on exactly that, on longevity and advantage play and like how to stay in the game for decades, what to do, what not to do. So I'm going to put something up on Twitter, but I'm doing that. I'm doing it for the same reason. I don't know what I'm going to charge. I'm doing it for that reason, but I'm not going to like hold back. Like, I didn't hold back in the seminar. So I just wanted to say that, like, that's going to be something I'm doing in the next couple of weeks.
So my father was a divorce lawyer, and he specialized in child custody, and I know those things can be awful.
You told me that, yeah. It's just such a drain. It is such a drain. But, yeah, so that's been going on a while. Hmm. Yeah. But as far as the workshop, that was a one and done. Like, I'm not doing that again. I know you asked AP consultant, I think, on the last show because he was the security guy. But I'm not trying to be a teacher. Like, that's not my goal here. But when I do it, like, I do it. Like, you'll learn something for sure. It's just not, like, this Zoom call is going to be one and done. I'm not planning on doing these every 6 months or whatever it is.
whether you can, if you ever decide to change that, it is a whole lot easier to do it the second time than it is to do it the first time. It takes a whole lot of work to prepare a class.
Oh, God, yeah. I wasn't prepared for that. Like, the busy work, I was like, what is this? Why do I have to, like, rent stuff and order food? Oh, my gosh. That was like real work.
It is now. Less food is needed on a Zoom call.
True,
now,
this is
true. So there will be listeners to our podcast who would be potentially interested in this Zoom workshop that you're teaching. Is Twitter the best way to find out about it? How would they know the details?
Yeah, they can go to my Twitter. I'm going to put something up on my site, like what it's about, where to register. It's gonna be on rxgamble.com. Should probably get on that in the next couple days and put something up.
And we'll have links to your site and to your Twitter in the show notes.
Awesome. Nice. Thanks.
All right. So you talked about longevity. How important is longevity and why? A quick 2-minute subject here.
I mean, it's so important. Like, if you quit your job and this is like your new occupation, like, you have to look ahead. You have to look ahead at 5, 10, 15 years. And a lot of people get into it because they learn a move that's popular. I don't know if popular is the right word. That's easily available, or they get into like a promotion or something like that. And they kind of hit it hard, not thinking that, oh, wait, there might be something better in a couple years, not realizing that they just burn their name or they burn their face when they should have been more careful about it. I think a lot of people, like card counters especially, they just don't think that far ahead. And when you've been in this business for like a few years, 5 years, it's hard to go back to the real world. Like, it's just tough.
Yeah, it's hard to go work for a boss who tells you, you know, just idiotic things when...
Yeah, exactly. And then even if you're a part-time player, like, you need to, and you go to your local casino and you count cards or whatever you're doing, you should be looking at that as, like, you don't want to burn your local spot. Like, you don't want to not be able to go in the casino a half hour away. So sometimes you should give up EV in the short term to get longevity at that specific casino. And people just kind of glaze over that. They don't think about it.
So what should they be doing to preserve that longevity?
I'm so big into cover. I'm annoying. Like, I'm so annoying to my teammates talking about cover and lost plays and like how to avoid heat or cleaning up a game. Like, I'll sit there for 2 hours after the fact, after we like do whatever we're doing. And people get really annoyed at me because they don't want to start doing a loss play or start showing a loss on their card when they're barely up anything. Like, we might have a spot where we're hoping to play there for a long time. We're only up 10K, something like that. And I'm like, all right, let's start putting losses on our card. And they're just like, stop, just stop. Because, you know, when you do a loss, you're going to lose money. Well, I mean, you're going to be playing at a disadvantage. You might not lose. So I'm like really into that stuff. And I think people should take those things into consideration or leave a game, like just walk off the game if you're getting heat to a level that's just not comfortable. Just leave it behind, which is really hard at times. And then there's the, at what point do you wear a disguise and at what point do you not use your name or go as a refusal or use a different name? Like, I think all of this stuff should be done in the beginning and not get into a later in the move and be like, oh, I should have done this thing 3 months ago.
But now you've been playing for decades and you're obviously, you know, really well known. I mean, you had a case go to the Supreme Court, for Christ's sake. Did you ever have a legal name change, or how are you still able to play after all this time?
Real quick, kind of having to do with that, AP Consultant was on the show and he talked about meeting me and like coming up to me and I don't know what he said. He like picked me off not working, like he wasn't working. He came up to me, and before saying anything, he showed me my surveillance picture on his phone. That's like what he did. I'm like, why? Who are you? Like, get away from me. Why are you showing me this? So yeah, I'm very well known, like, to surveillance operators that have been in the business, and my name is out there. I don't want to comment on the name change, but I've been able to play under different names. I've worn disguises. Like, I can change my look. I think it's easier for a guy to change their look, but I can do it.
Wait, you think it's easier for a guy to change his look?
Oh, yeah. They can grow a beard, and when they wear, like, a wig under their hat, like it's so much easier for them to wear a wig because they could put a hat on, and it changes their look, and it's less uncomfortable. Like, when you don't have to get the wig perfect on your hairline, it's just, it's so uncomfortable.
But can a woman wear a wig too? I mean, and put a hat on?
I'm saying, like, if a woman wears a wig with a hat, it, for whatever reason, kind of looks ridiculous. This is my experience. So if I wear a wig, I'm not wearing a hat, and it has to be perfect on your hairline so it doesn't look fake. And then you have to get, like, the really good wigs that when the camera comes down, it's not so see-through. I don't know if you've seen these pictures of, like, bad wigs, Munchkin, if you've ever seen. So you have to wear, like, a thick, like, wig. And so it's very uncomfortable. But if you're a guy and you could put, like, kind of like a mullet wig on and then put, like, a dirty hat, it's just, you don't have to have it exactly on your hairline. It's just so much more comfortable. And I've tried wearing, like a bandana, like a gypsy look on my wig, which just always looks terrible. But yeah, I think it's easier for a guy, for sure. And if a guy, like, comes in, like, all dirty, looking kind of homeless, and then he comes in a month later, like, dressed to the nines in a really nice suit, it makes a bigger difference with them than I think a female. That's my opinion, anyway.
Huh. Well, now, but what, don't you think most of the time you're not the one betting the money? Is that true?
Yeah, that's also true. So I can sit there and play table minimum and not get rated, which is what has kept my longevity. That's number one. I don't get rated.
But you mentioned your BPs using a card. You have them use a card?
Oh, yeah, almost. Nothing's absolute, but most of the time, yeah, they get rated. And it's easy, though. It's really easy to. This is something that also, at least, this is something that you can do. You can have your BP come in and be so-and-so, have them have a stop win, which is another thing people should consider. Like, let's say the casino does a complete review on you at, like, 100K, let's say that. And so you keep track of the win on your card, you get up to, like, 90K, you retire that BP, BP leaves. You bring in a new one, and that guy that just left comes back in, like, 6 months, 9 months with a new name and a new look, and you do it again. I like that approach better than, like, burning out a BP and then never playing with them again. I prefer that.
Well, yeah, you need lots of BPs if you're going to just burn them out.
People do that, though. They'll bring in, like, their friends or their father-in-law or whoever, and they'll just train them, burn them, and then move on to the next. And I prefer not doing that.
Well, yeah, if you have a good BP is so valuable.
So valuable.
Yeah, so once you have a good one, you definitely don't want to burn them out.
And, right, exactly.
You mentioned making loss plays, which is something really we haven't talked much about on the show before. But do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, it's just – I mean, I won't go into the details of how, but there are multiple ways you can – show a loss on your card without losing. You could think about being on a game and you coming up, having a chip inventory. You buy in, your partner's on the table, you take off your chips, you rat hole, they come up for the same amount. So you keep the rack the same when they read the rack, like, nothing's missing. And that's just, like, one way to do a loss play. And you're probably going to lose because you are betting while you're doing it. Like, you have to play hands. If you want to do, like, a big loss play, you're going to be betting, like, hundreds of dollars a hand. And you're going to be rat pulling. Your partner's going to be coming up. But you do enough of those, like, they add it up and you keep your win on your card down. And there's more ways to do it, but that's one way. That's probably the most obvious way. But they matter. They matter a lot.
Yeah, it matters a lot. It matters. I mean, I had a situation where I got backed. I got 86th, not because of my play, but because somebody came up and talked to me in the casino that shouldn't have.
Yeah. God, and,
and really, I was able to mitigate a lot of it. I got the 86 turned around, actually, after talking with the casino manager, because I had my card. This was back when I was using a card, because back then there were enormous comps to be had, cash comps. But I had a lifetime loss of $80,000 when in reality I was up six figures in the place. Right. So when I called the casino manager and said, you know, hey, look at my play over the last few years. And she's like, you know, well, but you could win all that back at one time. And I said, but if I'm this professional that you say I am, shouldn't I win eventually? Right. You know? Right. And, you know, she couldn't argue with that. She was like, yeah, okay, you know what, you can come back, but no more blackjack. So at least I got the 86 turned around and, you know, yeah, I mean, I didn't go back in for years anyway, but.
You have a lot of, like, leverage when you have a loss on your card, or even if you have a win, a loss. And there's other ways to get big losses on your card that cost, I don't want to say pennies, but that, like, cost not a lot of money. Like, if you're doing a big play, there's just other things you can do, and it matters. It matters a lot, and people just don't think about doing that, or they don't. I've worked with a lot of people who just don't want to do anything negative EV.
Yeah.
And it's always like it's always back and forth.
A struggle.
I'm so annoying about it.
Yeah. Yep. They just don't want to take any. It's also just about a swing. Like, they're worried, and I'm not talking about, you know, a card counter who has such a small edge, but when you play with a big edge, to not be willing to take a swing to preserve longevity is just crazy to me.
Yeah, you know what else happens along those lines? You'll be on a trip. I don't know if this happened. I'm sure it's happened to you. You're on a trip. You're up a ton. Last day, last shift of the trip, you find this like monster spot that's worth, you know, double digit edge, and you want to fire at it, and somebody on the team doesn't want to because they don't want to have a losing trip. Does this happen to you?
No, to me, that's an amateur. I mean, that's.
And no, I've played with people in the business for a very long time, and they just don't want to lose what we just, you know, earned over the weekend. I'm like, just please. Just
that's
stop.
Just, to me, that's just stupidity. Yeah. That just doesn't make any sense at all. So.
It doesn't make any sense, but it's happened to me a bunch of times. But then we play and whatever happens. If we lose,
you convince them.
Yeah, I convince them.
But I will say that, you know, if I'm on a trip that's going Thursday to Monday and I call my wife on, you know, Friday and she says, how are you doing? And I say, we're up X, she'll be like, come home now. So, but fortunately, she, you know, realizes that I'm not coming home just because we're ahead on Friday.
Right.
If you told her you're down X, would she say, come home now?
I call her on Monday and I say, we're down X. She'll say, don't come home.
Oh.
Yeah, no, it's the same either way. Like, come home with the money.
a couple things we slipped by quickly because I want to go back to. Richard has said a few times on this show that think twice, James Grosjean folded a $25,000 hand on some table game because he didn't want to show ID.
I did hear this. Was it on the show? I don't. Yeah, no, I know what you're talking about.
Several times he's done that to me.
I don't know that I could do that. Of course, I'm a video poker player. We're used to giving up ID. We do it on every jack, but I found that startling.
Yeah. Well, most people do. And I don't know many people who could do it, you know, who could stomach it. But, you know, if you think about it from his point of view, how much is that particular casino worth to you? Because if he gives up ID, he cannot play in that casino anymore for a long, long time.
Yeah. So, I mean, you have to do what you have to do. Like, I would do it in a specific spot. I wouldn't be happy about it. It would hurt me. But, yeah, I'd definitely do it if the numbers were right to do it. You just do what you have to do.
Yeah, I mean, you know, an example that'll make more sense to you, Bob, is, you know, being on a video poker game where I had to throw away four to a royal because I could not hit that royal flush and have to, you know, have to give ID. So,
I know the play you're talking about in Reno. And our listeners don't know what play you're talking about.
Right, but I'm just saying it was a play that was worth so much money that I could not afford to hit a royal.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, you know, those things happen.
I think I know what you're talking about. And that, it doesn't feel good, but I mean, you add it up. You have to do what you have to do. And even if you have to think bigger, too, like maybe you don't want to, like if you have a local casino, you want to keep good and you bet. Whatever you bet there, you do whatever you do there. When you go to the neighboring casino an hour away, 2 hours away, that shares information, like you have to think about that too. What you do there translates, goes back to the casino near your home. It's just a lot of stuff to weigh. There's a lot of stuff to weigh.
And by the way, just an example of where I shot myself in the foot was a casino where they had the lucky ladies bet.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very confident that my next hand was going to be two queens of hearts, which, you know, pays several thousand dollars. But if the dealer also gets blackjack, then it pays like $25,000 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I couldn't help myself, right? I had to, you know, I had to bet it. And ultimately, that ended up, you know, costing me that casino because I hit the lucky ladies, the two queens of hearts.
Which not only burns you, but can burn your teammates, which,
yes,
you know.
Yep.
And like you said, somebody talking to you in the casino, God, that's the worst. And that's just the worst. It's another thing that people don't think about that are especially new. And, like, slot players are, like, slot hustlers are really bad about this. They'll see you doing your thing and they know what you're doing. They'll just come up and start chatting you up. And not only is it dangerous for you, but it's dangerous for them. Like, you might have heat. You might be playing a slot for cover and now they come over and talk to you and now they have heat. Like, that's one of the worst things. That's super annoying. Like,
yeah.
I've run away from people. Like, I've literally just run and they just probably think I'm crazy. Just like, please don't talk to me.
Yeah. Don't talk to me in a casino. Like,
interesting. I can't do that. I'm a video poker teacher, and there are how many hundreds of thousands who've gone through my classes, one or more classes, and whenever somebody comes up and talks to me in the casino, I have to spend at least a minute or two being pleasant.
Right,
you know,
but Bob, if somebody from our show, you know, who's a radioactive card counter, came up and talked to you in the casino, you could find yourself, you know,
good point,
backed off. You know?
Absolutely. And it's a, but there's nothing I can do about it at this point in my career. I have made that bet, and so I have to face the consequences. After a minute or so, I go, you know, talk to me somewhere else, but I'm working now and I really need to concentrate. And most people respect that. Another thing we passed by rather quickly, you were talking about the differences between being a man and being a woman. And one of your problems, RX, is that not only you're a woman, you're a pretty woman.
Oh,
and there are always going to be pit critters and other guys who, married or not, always want to keep pitching, keep trying. And so an attractive woman, they study more. It's like, how do I get a piece of that? And so they watch you, whereas not many of those pit critters are sexually attracted to Richard. And so
speak for yourself.
I was. Well, they're not attracted to me either. So do you ever try to
use look it ugly?
Kind of like when you go on a date, you try to look good. But when you go in a casino, do you try to look bad?
Oh yeah, I look like I haven't slept or showered for days. Usually not. I mean, if I go on a trip, like I want to go unnoticed. Like I dress pretty poorly often. I know Gross Gene wrote a blog. I think it was a blog, or it was probably a blog because he doesn't really have social media, where he talked about me getting a guy out of like the lucky seat by flirting with him. And I did. I remember that. I sat down at a table where we needed the seat, and I chatted him up, and I told him the table wasn't lucky. Let's go play at another table. And we went, and we played, and we opened up the game for our crew. And I remember it because I don't do it often. Like, I don't like doing it. I don't, in general, just like small talk, I guess. Like, I didn't want to do it. It's uncomfortable. But I did it. And in general, I don't do that stuff. I more just act like I'm stupid. And I can get away with that because I'm a girl and I'm okay looking. So I can look stupid, and that turns the bosses more than if I flirted with them. Because if you flirt with the boss, like one time I was on a game and I was betting, which is rare for me. And I was really young. I was like 25 or 26, and I'm betting like hundreds of dollars. So I had to say, I was a dancer. I was a stripper, because that was the only thing that made sense. And then you've got the foreman just on you the entire time, just like chatting you up. Once you say that, like, that's the worst thing for me to say, even though I've said it multiple times. And I don't want that. So more often I just act like I'm really dumb. I'll count my total on my hands, which always gets them. It never fails to get like a chuckle ever. It just never fails, but it's not something that draws them to me to talk to me. So I try not to flirt as a turn.
That also makes you, they're going to remember you more too, if you flirt with them.
Right? Oh yeah. There's definitely that. And I have a way about me. Like if you're a civilian and you sit down at the table when I'm on a play, I have a way about me that I just look like a bitch. Like I don't want to talk to you. And it usually works because I don't want to talk to you. And there are times I have to do it. I have to turn the civilian. I have to turn the dealer, whatever, but I can look at you and you know, I just don't. Just leave me alone. So, I usually don't go in dressed up unless, you know, it's Saturday night in the, what's it called? What was it called? The party pit, or what did it used to be called at Caesars? You know what I'm talking about? What was that pit called? Whatever. You know what I'm saying. If it's the party pit or it's the weekend and I'm at like a really nice place, like the Palms when it used to be like really popular, I'd go in there and I'd look better than I normally do. So mostly I don't flirt, but I have done it. I will do it. I don't like doing it.
Now, you've been talking about longevity. It's different for a table game player than it is for a video poker player. Or is it, given that video poker players have to give up their ID? And part of longevity is often not giving up your ID.
Well, you guys can go in there with your significant other and play on their card. And some casinos care and some casinos just don't. And they'll just give the W-2 to whoever. Is that,
yes.
Am I saying it right? Yeah. So you have that. You can also do lost plays as a slot player so that when you do give your name, you're not burning yourself with a huge slot win. Is that correct also? Would you agree?
Yeah. Yeah, so, and what about that? I mean, they are backing people off of slots now in Vegas. Do you have thoughts about longevity for being able to play slots?
I've done this before. There's like a big must hit, let's say in a casino, where I know if I give my card, like I'm out the door. Like there's no way I can get away with it. Like I'm as far as Vegas goes, like, I have people on speed dial. Hey, this is there. Go play it or play it with me, so that they're giving their name up. And there's other advantages to using multiple people, but you just have to have those outs ready.
Is that an answer to your question?
No, I was asking about slots. I mean, it seems to me that a lot of slot players do not think about longevity, and they just do things that are so stupid that just make them so obvious.
I was on a hole card game with this guy who was very clearly new for many, many reasons. I knew this. And he got off the game, the dealer left, and he went to check a slot machine right by the pit. I'm just like, why are you doing this? Like, when you find an easy hole card game, especially, you don't, like, you think you're great at playing hole cards because there's this billboard game in front of you. And if there's a billboard game, usually the casino or the, they're just not that aware, so you can get away with looking awful. So then you don't even think, you don't fast forward, I shouldn't check the slot machine in front of the pit. I just couldn't believe what he was doing. Yeah, slot players, like hustlers, vultures, they don't think about this stuff. I don't know.
Do you know a lot of slot players who've been backed off in Vegas?
I don't, and it's because I don't really... I purposely
associate
don't.
With them.
Yeah. I mean, there's a couple, like, I've talked about in my blog, like, I have a burner app on my phone, and there's a couple that have talked to me that have that number, and they're helpful, but in general, like, I try not to talk to them too much. There was one guy who ran me down on the strip. I was scouting a must hit, and he ran me down, like, chased after me. I'm like, why? And he's calling my name. And then I stop finally, and he just starts talking to me about, like, Ultimate X. And I was like, why are you talking to me?
Yeah, talking about rookie mistakes and your guy who went to check the slot, we had a new BP one time, and, he's on the table with us betting thousands of dollars a hand. And then he's staying in the hotel on a comp. And the next day we go back to play again, and we find out that at night he had gone down because he had a lot of degenerate in him. He had gone down and was playing for nickels on his own money in the same casino where he had been betting two hands of 2,000 or whatever.
Yeah.
And we had to explain to him, look, you can't do this. You know, you want to go play for nickels, go downtown or something, but not in the same casino.
We had a BP who, we had a great game. We had a BP. It was a great setup. It was worth so much money. And so this BP went and played another game at another casino that flyers a lot, while our move is going down. And we're just like, you can't do that, because if you get caught there, it goes to this casino. Like, you actually have to walk away from other opportunities. And that's, you got to think about all this stuff.
Yeah.
All right. We're talking to RX Gamble, a.k.a. Miss Brown. We'll be right back to her. And we have some commercials to talk about. South Point has more than 10,000 games returning more than 99%. This is more than anyone else has. The promotion in January is $400,000 spin to win. Mondays through Thursdays, 3 a.m. to 2:59 a.m. For every 2,000 points you play on your card, you spin a virtual wheel on your machine. The average in the past has been between $12 and $15 per spin. But even at $12, that makes it an extra 0.6%, which would make it triple points. There's four of these a day you can do. So for a $8,000 a day, 4 days a week, 4 weeks is 128,000. You get triple points if you continue to go back. It is a nice little cushion. At predictit.org, there's a market where you can place small bets on the occurrence of various political events, mostly but not entirely in the United States. Now, the election is over, but there's still active markets relating to the election. Like, for example, the Senate races in Georgia are still up for grabs. Will particular senators object to the election results is still unknown at the time we do this. If they also are starting, will various people vote or various people file in 2024? Those elections, though, if you bet on it, your money's going to be tied up for 4 years or however long it is until it's decided. And that may not be a good use of your money there. Listeners have a one-time deposit match of up to $20 at predictit.org/promo/edge. You must play the money through once and cannot withdraw it for 30 days. Blackjack Apprenticeship is an excellent site for those of you who wish to be successful counting cards at blackjack. Lots of free videos on YouTube, and if you sign up for a membership, there's a lot more free videos behind the paywall. At videopoker.com, it's the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get correction on most of the games. The game of the week is Powerhouse Poker. This is a 10 coins per line game where you get dealt extra hands, some with multipliers, when you are dealt a paying combination. For example, if you're dealt two pair, you may be given hands and four of them have multipliers from 4x to 8x. How many extra hands you get and how big the multipliers are varies from game to game. The extra hands start from the same position and the same hold you make. Let's say you're dealt two pair queens and fives in a game where it's correct to hold most pairs. Should you decide to only hold the queens, as many players incorrectly do, the extra hands will all start from holding a pair of queens. The game always returns more than a five-card version of the same pay schedule, and no strategic variations are necessary in order to play the game perfectly. All right, we're back talking to RX Gamble. We had a question from a listener who, when he heard you're coming on, they had a Richard actually brought it to my attention. It resulted with a team in Atlantic City where the player lost $500 quickly. Richard, do you remember that one?
Yeah, it wasn't a question. We had solicited stories from listeners about rookie mistakes. Mistakes people made when they were new. In that particular case, the guy was on a card counting team. He found a shoe that started getting positive right away. He started firing into it, and then at the end of the shoe realized he was playing Spanish 21. So felt very guilty for having lost money. I think this is a kind of mistake that has happened to a lot of people. If not Spanish 21, certainly with 6 to 5.
Yeah, I read the story. I don't know if it was a question. As soon as I read it, like, the team is responsible. That's just what I thought. When you have a team, you need to establish rules for mistakes or for getting robbed or for losing money. And so that should have been established, but it just read to me like, the team takes the $500 hit, and then you talk about it, and you don't do it again.
Yeah, I would also, make it a team loss, not a individual.
You would make it a team loss the first time this particular player did it. When he does it the second time, it's up to him. It's on him. Is that right?
It's between the team members, like, or whoever's running the team. Like, you just have to decide beforehand. Maybe that's the rule. I don't know.
Yeah, it would depend. It would depend on if it was grossly negligent. I mean, like, we one time had a guy who went out after a play. It was a big player. He went out after a play, got totally drunk, and like apparently $7,000 like fell out of his pocket in the back of a cab, or at least he thought that's where it might have been. You know, in this particular case, we felt like the guy had been really negligent, and you know, said, you know, look, that was on you. You know,
it's tough. Like, I've used paid players often, where I'll pay someone for the weekend to like move chips or get seats or whatever we need done, and. Yep. Often they have a lot of cash or chips on them that they're moving. And so it's not fair to them to put them in the position to be responsible for this money. But on the other hand, if you leave it in a taxi, there has to be some sort of, I don't want to say punishment, but some sort of like, it's on you. But then on the other hand, you have a P, we call them P's. We have a paid player that's making a few thousand for the weekend. If they lose 20,000, like, they don't have 20,000. There's just so many different factors to take into account.
Yeah. Yeah. And as I say, a lot of it has to me, a lot of it has to do with whether I thought they were grossly negligent.
Yeah. I agree with that.
In the vast majority of cases, I'm usually on the side of the team eats the lost. But occasionally somebody will do something so kind of boneheaded that,
yeah, I'm with you. It's usually the team. I had something in kind of recent, like in the last year, where I had a paid player and they had to pick up free play. And we didn't discuss what would happen if they didn't pick it up. And they didn't pick it up. And it was a couple thousand dollars. And they weren't, you know, they weren't being paid a couple thousand dollars. So now what do you do? Like, we just had to take the loss. Like, we didn't talk about it beforehand. There's no way they're going to pay it back. It just was a bad situation. It's just, this stuff happens, unfortunately.
Yeah.
You need to make rules like, hey, if you can't pick it up, get a hold of so-and-so or so-and-so or whatever. You need an out, and we didn't give him an out.
Yeah, part of the problem is it's impossible to think about every single situation that can arise, you know?
Yep.
It just seems no matter how hard you try to plan for everything and talk about everything, just shit comes up nobody ever thought of, you know?
Yep, totally.
One of the corresponding things that happened in video poker is so when you're playing a game and you have credits on the machine, the game will stay on whatever it is. Let's say you're playing Jacks or Better, $25. As long as you have at least one credit on there, it will stay $25 Jacks or Better. But eventually it goes down to zero. Mm-hmm. And so it can take a while to put money back in. And during that time, the machine can shift to the default game. So that might be a $25 Joker Wild pay schedule with a different, which is not as good of a game at this casino, perhaps, and with a very different strategy. And you can go and play for quite a while on the wrong game without having any idea until you hit a jackpot you weren't expecting, or you don't hit a jackpot you were expecting. And that can end up to... all of us have done this, whether we're on a team or playing as individuals. But whether we're rookie or not, still happens.
Yeah, I know. As 6 to 5 proliferated, you know, everybody, you know, jumped into 6 to 5 games without realizing it was a 6 to 5 game. And, you know, you're not really, in those cases, even with the Spanish 21 or the 6 to 5 game, you're not giving up that much in terms of EV.
Right.
You know, it's really not a lot of money in that. I mean, that you may take a swing, but the actual EV loss really isn't much.
Bob, were you saying, like, if somebody hits a jackpot or makes money on a machine they weren't supposed to be playing that they might argue that they should keep it? Is that what you were saying? Or has that ever happened?
Probably. My experience with video poker is to be playing as a solo, not as a team member. But there are times where they're playing jacks or better, and for whatever reason, the default game is double-double bonus with a bad pay schedule, and they get dealt four deuces or something, and it pays a whole lot more on the double-double on than they would, or the other way around, where it can pay more or it can pay less. So I'm just saying it happens. You know, you got to be careful of it. I have not been part of teams where that I've had that discussion, although I've been in the same room where team members are openly discussing how they would do how they would deal with it, which I was curious in hearing what they said. But and it wasn't to my interest to tell them to shut up because I didn't think because I wasn't a part of that team. And I didn't occur to me that they shouldn't be letting the casino know that they were together. But it was a long time ago. I've learned some things.
I think this happens in poker sometimes when you take a piece of someone and it gets lost in translation, like with texts firing back and forth. And then they thought maybe they had more or less of you, and you win or lose, and you're just in a spot where, like, I don't – like, I get – like, you win a bunch of money. They thought maybe they had 10%. You thought they had 20%. Do you give them the 20%? Do you give them the 10%? Like, if you lost, which one would you use? That happens a lot in poker. I don't know. If I was on a video poker team, I would think that everything just goes in the pot for every mistake. That's my default thought on it. Poker chops are tough.
Yeah, especially if you don't consider tax ramifications. Several years ago, Jamie Gold won the $12 million, and there was a big dispute as to whether or not the guy who had a piece of him should take part of the taxes. And Jamie came across as a sleazeball, and which may or may not be true, but
He didn't want to pay that guy his part of the chop, and that guy had a voicemail from Jamie, I think it was, saying like he was in the chop or how much he had. It was very specific, and Jamie was trying to say, you know, he didn't have a piece. I'm pretty sure that was what was going on, and I think the guy who claimed he did prevailed. I'm pretty sure.
Okay, without bad mouthing Jamie any further. One of our other listeners say one of their rookie mistakes was following security when security asked you to accompany them. So when this happens to you, when security says, please follow me, what do you do?
It's situational. Like I've had security say stop while I'm walking toward the exit, and I keep walking. And, I've had security grab me and I do nothing because you don't want to look like you're resisting and give them a reason to be forceful with you. And on camera, it looks like they have the right to be. I mean, I don't. If somebody says stop, I don't. If I'm surrounded, then I don't fight it. I always have my hands in my pocket if I have pockets, or to my side so it doesn't look like I'm trying to hit them or something like that. If they ask for ID, you know, I don't give it. If I don't want to, I think I tweeted this before. Somebody asked me for my ID in a casino and I thought it was an age check. So I gave it to him and he got on his radio. So I'm like, okay, it's heat. I asked for my ID back and he said no. So I just walked out and I left my ID. Like, I think just in general, you don't have to listen to them as long as you're not, forceful. You're not forceful in not listening to them. Is what I'd say. If you're surrounded, you got to go. If they're just asking you to stop, just keep walking, I think, what you should do. What do you think, Munchkin?
Yeah, no, I'm the same way. I've had them say stop, and, you know, and I just kept walking, and I remember them saying, you have to cash out your chips, because I was not right. going to the cage. That's a mistake yeah. a lot of people make, is to go cash out their chips. And I just kept walking, and they were like, only you can cash those chips. And I was like, okay, you know, I just kept going. So,
or if they want you to sign something, like, don't sign. Even if you're in the back room, don't sign. Don't sign anything.
Yeah, don't sign anything, and don't give up your ID. I mean, just...
Oh, yeah, that's another one.
Just don't give them the ID. And another mistake that they make, that a lot of people make, is a play where... Well, first of all, any play, I mean, after a play, I don't go directly to the cage. Like, bad things happen right. at the cashier's cage, right? Right? You can always go back later and cash out. And definitely, if there's any kind of heat... Never want to go to the cage if there's heat, because that's where they get the best photographs of you, is at the cashier's cage.
And it's where they like trap you. They take your chips and then they don't give them back.
Yeah.
You're at the cage. Now you have to decide, do you want to leave and deal with gaming? Like, don't go to the cage in general. Don't go to the cage.
Yeah.
And then if you're in the back room, though, you don't have to give your ID, but if the cops come, you do have to give your ID. Like, if they ask for it, you have to give it. And then there are situations where you're in the back room, the security isn't, you can kind of tell they're not being like total jerks, and you might want to comply to get out the door, but it's situational.
What about, have you ever turned on the recorder on your phone once security confronts you?
I have not done that.
Yeah, no. That's something I would do. I mean, I haven't been confronted by security in a long, long time. So
I was going to say that. Yeah, it's been a long time for me too, surprisingly, and I haven't. But next time I will do that. I know a story of somebody who was walking into a casino who ID'd everyone. It was just one of those places, give your ID at the door. So they gave a fake ID at the door. And some people think when you give an ID at the door and you have a bad name, you're going to get kicked out instantly. Most of the times, if you have a bad name, you're not going to get kicked out. Like, even if they slide it through their little thing and your name pops up, like, it's not communicating with surveillance or whatever. Most of the time. So anyway, they give a fake ID at the door. They realized it was fake and they back room this person. And this person was trying to get out of it and explained that they were there to do whatever they were doing, and the security said they would let them go if they showed their real ID. So this person who had the fake ID didn't have their real ID on them, had to call their teammate to drop their real ID off at the security podium walking in so that they could get out of the back room and leave. So one of their teammates had to do that. Oh, it was just such a mess. So he did. He ran in and dropped it and just ran out, and they didn't get him. And then that person got out of the back room. But yeah, stuff
wow.
happens.
When you're in a back room and a police officer is called and says, I'm going to need your ID, do you mention to that police officer, I have to give it to you, but if you give it to them, you're violating my rights and there'll be a lawsuit. And then, of course, they'll take your ID and immediately hand it over to the casino. Do you have a conversation with the police about not doing that, or how does that work?
I have, and I just got laughed at.
Yeah,
they're
not going to
listen. Laughed at me. Yeah.
So they're not looking.
One time a security guard wrote my license plate down, and he's not really allowed to run it. I don't know the exact law, but I was like, you're not allowed to run that. And he also laughed at me.
Yeah, I mean, because they have some connection with the police, and the police do it for them even though they shouldn't.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Especially if you're in a tribal area, right, where it's tribal police. I mean,
you've got no shot in an Indian casino.
You mentioned something in the notes about handing over your player's card or your ID face up or face down.
Oh, yeah. How much time do we have?
We have time.
Let's assume we have 5 minutes for this question.
All right. Here's the problem with that. There's so many problems with that. I can riff about this forever. Number one, when you give your player's card to the floorman, if you're getting raided, and you give it face up, you don't want anyone to know, to become familiar with your name. So even if the dealer sees it, picks it up and hands it to the floorman, you don't want them to know that your name is like Robert. My name is Robert. Like, you just don't want that memory in their head. So just turning it over is one little thing. They don't see it. Also, turning it over, giving to the foreman, like, he's going to put it in anyway, but even if you turn it over and he just swipes it, he might not see your name. And so you're less memorable. But like, going further with that, if I'm at a table with you and you're a player and I see your name on your player's card, I'm going to get so much information about you that could potentially like hurt your move. I wrote a blog about this counting team that I came upon in the casino, and I picked them off as counters. I wrote a blog about the female on the team, like, not taking initiative. That's a separate subject. But anyway, so these guys would come in and they played this counting game, and the game was good partially because of the comps. So they all got raided. So over a couple of times at their table, because I wanted to know what they were doing, I got four of their names. So then I took their names and I went online and I Googled them. And then I found three social media accounts. I found two social media accounts and one LinkedIn. So it's like, okay, now I have your names. I know what you do for a living. I know where you live. And then I took that and I ran their names through a few surveillance databases. So now I know who you're associated with, what your history is, like, do you have any other moves? And it's just too much information. Like, you are giving too much information out to somebody who could potentially use it to gain knowledge about your moves. Like, if these card counters were, let's say, kicked out of some casino somewhere for shuffle tracking or sequencing, I'm going to take a harder look at the game. I'm going to say, okay, I thought they were counting. Maybe they're doing something better. Or if they traveled 1,000 miles to get to this game, I'm going to think twice about it. Like, oh, what am I missing? There's something better about this. Or if they're local, it's like, okay, these are just new card counters, whatever, they're just playing this game. You're just giving out way too much info. Like, I shouldn't know your name. The dealer shouldn't see your name and remember it. Even the foreman, just keep your card face down.
One of the things I find really annoying is there are some dealers that if you put your card out on the table, like for the dealer to go put it on the side for the boss to get it, mm-hmm. and there are some dealers who will pick it up, look at it, and now start calling you Robert every time they talk
yes.
to you.
Yes.
You know, which I find really annoying. You know, a funny story. We were on a game, and there was a civilian on the game that we were really trying to get off the game, and she had her player's card sitting on the table next to her chips. Mm-hmm. And so a teammate went and had her paged in the casino asked to go to the lobby to meet up their party. And the woman heard it, picked up all her chips, left the table, you know, and we got the seats that we needed. And she came back like 10 minutes later and was pissed that we wouldn't let her back on the table. But
That's a good move to do if somebody's put like on a slot machine that you want, because they always have their player's card, you know, and if you can get a glimpse at it and page them, it's a good spot to do that.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't give my name at Starbucks. I don't want anyone to have my name, but especially in the casino, it's just don't put your player's card face up. It's just not a good.
It's funny you say that, because I was in a Starbucks with a mutual friend of ours, and I ordered something, and they asked my name, and I said, Richard, and he hit me in the arm, and he said, don't give them your real name. I was like, it's Starbucks. You know,
you never
like,
know who's in there. You
yeah, exactly. Know you know, he was absolutely right, and ever since that time, I have never given my real name in Starbucks again.
Yeah, my son has yet to ask me why I give a different name. Like, he hasn't brought it up yet, and I'm not sure. I mean, just I think even if I wasn't gambling, I wouldn't give my real name. Although I wouldn't be so paranoid if I wasn't a gambler. So I don't know.
In video poker, you're playing for a while, and there's people who you might say, or if you have to go to the restroom, it's become friendly enough that, you know, can you wash my machine for 2 minutes? And sure, no problem. And you have a sense as to who you can trust on. And so so there are players who will leave $500 of credits mm-hmm. on their machine while they go do this, but they will take their cards with them just for that reason. They're not worried about losing $500. They figure that's safe, but they are worried about giving up their complete ID. Now, there are some casinos who their player tracking system, you put your card in, you know, and it will say, you know, welcome Bob Dancer. And there's others and it will leave the name Bob Dancer up there for everybody to see when you go by.
Yeah, you got to
There are others that don't do anything like that. Usually they will say, you know, welcome Bob Dancer at the beginning, but they won't keep your name up there.
Some will put your name up there and then every like minute pop it up. Like it won't be up there and then every minute it'll say, Hey, Bob Dancer.
Yeah. And I haven't run across that, but I believe you, but haven't run across that in Las Vegas. All right. We have been talking.
Sorry, going back to that, you have to protect that. You need to put a dollar up or a pamphlet up. If you're doing free play really quick, like put your hand over it. You should definitely. That's another thing that, like, hustlers especially, they don't think about. I shouldn't walk by and see your name.
For sure.
Yeah.
All right. We've been talking to RX Gamble, a.k.a. Miss Brown, about a variety of things with beginner mistakes and longevity. We want to thank you very much. It's been a pleasure. At the end of our show, we frequently come up with a recommendation from Richard, occasionally me, even more occasionally from our guests. So, Richard, do you have something for us today?
Yeah, my recommendation this week is depending on when you're listening to this, a recent episode of the Planet Money podcast, and the title of that episode is Fork the Government, which is not what it sounds like. The particular episode is about how Taiwan has handled the COVID crisis with the help of white hat hackers. And it's kind of like how hackers and the government work together to really keep COVID in check in Taiwan. So it's a very interesting episode. So just briefly, the population of Taiwan is about the same as the population of Florida. And at the time of the episode, Taiwan had 5 COVID cases, whereas Florida had 1 million. So wow. Anyway, I recommend it. Check it out. Fork the Government. It's the podcast Planet Money.
And for my recommendation, I've recently been reading a book called Rock Breaks Scissors. It's a book by William Poundstone. The most famous book by him is Fortune's Formula. But this is a book with a lot of, if you're making small bets or something, which way to make the smart money bet if you don't have a lot of information. And it's interesting. A lot of it is things I already knew. Like on lottery, you go with numbers that aren't in the first 31 because it won't be hit on birthdays. It won't be hit on dates. But there were some in every in lots of different categories that I had never thought about, that if you're making a bet, this is a smarter play if you have no other information. I found it very, very interesting.
I have a recommendation. Is it my turn?
Well, yeah.
By all means.
Okay. It's a book called The Woman Who Smashed Codes. It's about a woman, Elizabeth Friedman, who was a code breaker during the war. And before that, her husband was also a code breaker. And they It's almost, I mean, the Codebreakers basically won World War II, and they, like, during Prohibition, they were able to stop a lot of stuff going on, and it was really interesting to hear how codebreaking, like, got developed and how they didn't get any credit for it. They hardly got paid anything, and you wouldn't know about these people without, you know, somebody writing a book 50 years later. It was really interesting, The Woman Who Smashed Codes. It's a good book.
Huh. And we'll have links to all this in the show notes.
Thank you, Miss Brown.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Richard. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good day.